CliffCentral.com.
I was having an insightful chat with someone a few days ago about why the African narrative needs to be re-looked at and why African people themselves need to hold the proverbial pen in rewriting this narrative and conception. We're taking a bold step into a territory that many would not dare to tread, but it's all in the aim of participating in open, uninhibited, constructive, and opinionated dialogue. You can join the conversation by tweeting us your thoughts throughout the show on @YLPCliffCentral on Twitter and Instagram, or Youth Leadership Platform on Facebook. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform, brought to you by Leadership Platform in association with Student Brands. My name is Sasha Lee Gonzalez, and let's dive right into it. Okay, so always ready for his voice to be heard, TV show extraordinaire, media personality from Zimbabwe. He is highly opinionated and has a strong voice through whatever he does in terms of fashion, writing, speaking, whatever work it is that he does. So backtracking to the conversation I had with this person very recently, the person I was actually chatting to is none other than Gilmore T. Moyo.
Yeah, you used my entire full name.
I had to. It's such an amazing name. It's so different.
Oh, thank you.
Fantastic. So, Gilmore is the founder of Huna Agency. Correct pronunciation?
Oh, you did. Bravo. Many people can't pronounce that.
Is it? Okay, so I got it right.
Yeah, bravo.
Huna Agency, a host and producer, as well as fashion facilitator, and more recently, an official Mandela Washington Fellow.
Yeah, applause again.
That is really like so pishash. So Gilmore, thank you so much for coming to the studio today and for taking the time.
No, thank you for having me and thank you for the donuts.
Oh, and the tea. Pleasure. It's so necessary. Cream and tea for Gilmore tea.
No, thank you. I'll take a picture and put it up on social media.
We definitely
like,
need to do that.
Got donuts from you guys.
Tag me, tag Krispy Kreme.
I will.
Boom, bang. So let's get right into it. Now, Gilmore, you are, well, I consider you to be, just after having chatted to you, a young leader in many regards.
Yes.
Especially in the creative and arts space. So tell us about your journey of how you have gotten to where you are. Gilmore, 10, 16, 15 years ago to where he is now.
So, you know, funny enough, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a pilot, but then I think in primary school, I was like one of those noisy kids. I was never a class monitor. I was never a prefect. I was never anything. But my best friend was a head boy in primary school.
Okay.
So every time I get into trouble, always have to bail me out. So I think then with that in mind, being a pilot was still in the limelight when I was in primary school, like between the ages of 6 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I got to 12 years old, I realized that actually throughout the years that I was in primary school, I was very much involved in the arts. I remember like when I was 11 years old, I represented my primary school, my Capeton Primary School, at the National Art Gallery. They took my piece, like my painting that I had done, and then they put it up there. So I was like, okay, cool. Maybe after all, this pilot thing might not be my thing. Maybe I like spaces. I like creating things. But I'm grateful that the pilot thing still hangs with me because I do travel a lot. So I'm not the one driving. I don't even know what to do with the airline. I mean, aeroplane, do you drive it?
You fly it.
You fly it, right? So I'm not the one who's flying it, but I think my destiny is still in the right path. So I do a lot of traveling. And I was just basically involved in a lot of activities, like community service stuff, things that allowed me to be creative. I found myself always participating in that. And 16 years old, I participated in a Rotary Youth Exchange program.
Mm.
And then I sort of like realized that I liked working with people.
I was just about to say, very much people's person.
I like working with people, but at the same time, I'm a very much introvert. Like, I love my space. Like, trust me, I like my space. I like this time to just, you know, reflect, self-reflect.
So you're like selectively extroverted.
I'm selectively. So I think that's where my journey started, and then I realized that at the same time, there's so many people that I was friends with, or so many people that I represented, like communities. Maybe I was working with children living with a disability. They never had the voice. In terms of, they have the voice, they can speak, but they never had the same platform as I had when I was a younger person. So I became a voice to them.
For them.
So at the end of it all, I realized I'm a voice. So in whatever that I do, might it be in writing, because I do write, I do radio, I do a lot of fashion stuff and podcasts, I need to be a voice, not only for myself, but for anyone else who cannot get the same opportunity. So that's how my journey started. Good Lord, I feel like it's been a long time.
Since you've looked back.
Yeah, so yeah, that's me. That's where I am now, and I'm happy with that, with where I am, rather, and the people that are around me, basically.
So now, I know that you are highly opinionated, and like you have the strong desire to share your opinions on whatever platform and through, which I find commendable, because, you know, a lot of people are very selective in how they share their opinions, you know, and it's kind of like, I understand the caution, but it's like, okay, well, if this is going to get me into trouble, let me rather not. Whereas you kind of, you step out of that boundary, you know what I mean? Which I find really commendable. So I think we need more people like that, especially young people who are willing to openly and constructively share their opinions instead of following in the trail of other people's opinions.
Yeah, true.
So based on this, Gilmore, do you actually care what people think about being opinionated?
I don't care, rather. I've gotten in trouble so many times, and so some people like won't even talk to me like for years, which I find ridiculous and childish. Yeah, this is how I take it. I feel like until and unless you're not able to say what you think, you don't set yourself free. What I mean by that is, for example, I see someone looking extremely good. I think it's not even a norm here in Zimbabwe, in Africa, in South Africa, to compliment on someone. Because sometimes when you compliment on someone, they look at you like you want them. I'm like, no, I'm just saying you're looking good. Calm down. You know what I'm saying? So for me, what I have done when I see you looking good and I say, listen, you look good, I've set myself free from that thing that I was holding
on to.
And I've said it and I'm done with it. How you take it is up to you. So it's the same thing when I don't like something and I'm like, oh, this was horrible or this was badly done. I've said it and I feel it needs to be said, because why we do not grow as a people is because we like buttering each other. Like, oh my gosh, you look gorgeous. I'm like, you don't look gorgeous at all. Or someone's like, oh, the event was amazing. I'm like, but how are we going to grow if we're not able to say things that we feel? So I don't think I really much care about how someone takes it. I mean, I know it sounds very stupid or selfish, but I think when I say something, it's up to you how you receive it.
Completely.
Really, I mean, perception. The power is in your hands, but I've let it go, so whatever.
So you think it's important for young people to keep in mind that they need to stick to their opinion regardless of what's happening around them?
I think so, and I think if more of us as young people do that, things will begin to shape up a little bit, because people know what we think. But I think at the moment, people don't know what young people think because we hide behind social media.
Mm.
Social media is also a tool that we can use to say what we think. But then if you also get an opportunity to vocally or verbally express yourself, do that. If you have the opportunity to write whatever, you can do that. So we sort of like, as young people, we're hiding behind so many things and we don't say what we think. And we spend so much time on some of these things and we don't even express ourselves.
And
so,
it's crazy because I think we're trapped in this idea that we are expressing ourselves, you know, by posting selfies and, you know, what I'm doing today and this and that on Instagram. But then again, you know, what are you expressing? You're not...
Like what voice? Because, you know, at the end of it all, you know, you want your story to... What are you going to be known for? That's one thing for sure. So you can be on social media and have 1,000 or 1,000,000 followers, but what are you being known for? For example, good Lord, who am I going to throw shade at?
Oh gosh, you're going to get the Gilmore. I feel sorry for whoever this is.
It's just like, okay, I know many people don't like the Kardashians. I was going to say someone who's very like opinionated. Ntsiki Mazwai, for example. You know, Ntsiki Mazwai is known for saying what she thinks. And I think at the end of it all, people know that this girl says what she thinks. And I think that's very important. And even the Kardashians that people don't like, they're known for their makeup and selling their products. They're still selling their products. That's their voice. So when you die or when you pass on or when you're old, what are you going to be known for? For selfies? What were they saying, the selfies? You know what I'm saying?
I have a reason behind your posting, people.
Yeah.
I have a reason.
Yeah.
So now, one of your greatest achievements as of late, like I referred to earlier on, was being one of the handful of people selected to partake in the Mandela Washington Fellowship.
A huge thing.
That is amazing. So congratulations, first.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's an amazing platform, firstly. And second, it's very competitive because 68,000 young African leaders applied for it in 2017. And only 1,000 of us were selected.
And you were one of them.
And I was one of the 1,000. So I was, like, really excited about it. And there's like, when you look at Africa, you're like, so why are we stuck in this space, in this dark hole? Because oh, these young people, what are we doing? What are we doing? So sometimes I think it also, it's the program itself, it gave me an opportunity to sort of like reflect and look at myself and say, okay, listen, I can be doing this and that, but what am I actually doing? Because we're constantly this dark hole in the world, and yet there's like 68,000 of us, and there's 1,000 of us that are brilliant. Because when you listen to stories from Ghana, Nigeria, Angola, South Africa, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Lesotho, etc., you'll be like, wow, guys, what are we doing? What are we doing wrong? Or what are we not doing, actually? But the program is amazing. Trust me, it's beautiful.
So now, how was the experience for you, like, on a day-to-day basis? Like, what was your mind thinking, like, every day? Like, I'm here, I'm actually here. Do I need to pinch myself? What was the experience like for you overall?
I never sort of, like, said, oh, I need to pinch myself. I got excited when I got selected for it, right? But I remember someone saying to me, how come you're not showing your excitement? I'm like, how am I supposed to show my excitement? Like, am I supposed to jump off the roof or something? So I think, you know what, when you work hard, Sasha, when you work hard and you're constantly working and trying to be a better person, when things come to you, because things start aligning to you, and when you're just walking by, you're sort of like just picking. It's like you're walking in a market and picking vegetables, carrots, whatever, tomatoes, potatoes, etc. So those are like the results of you working hard and aligning yourself with the right people, with the right track and things like that.
Yeah.
So when I was there, for me, it was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. But what I constantly kept in my mind was like, everybody who's here is just as amazing as I think I am. And I'm also just as good as everyone who's here. Because I think what we also have as human beings, we don't acknowledge the works that we have done for ourselves.
I want to actually tap onto that.
Yeah.
This thing of being humble, but like going overboard. What is your thoughts on that? Because I so agree with you. There's a problem there. There really is.
Humility is very much important. But while you are at that and you've achieved all these things, you always need to remember what made you where you are, and what drives you, and what voice you want people to hear of you, even if 10 years down the line. So I think once you have those things in mind, and your family also, they keep you very much like in a good space. But sometimes it's nice to throw, you know, to say, yeah, I've done this, I've done that. It's allowed. But then I think there's a thin line between humility and just overboard boasting. So you need to find a balance in it. But you need to celebrate yourself. That's one thing for sure. I think young people don't celebrate themselves, and that's the same thing that makes us be idle in terms of our opinions, because we don't realize how much we've worked. And like now I'm looking at myself, I'm like, dude, like 68,000 people applied, and I'm also one of the 1,000 for the Mandela Washington Fellowship. I need to celebrate myself. I need to celebrate myself, and I do celebrate myself.
Right.
And sometimes people are like, oh, you have too much, you're arrogant. I'm like, I'm not being arrogant. I've worked for this thing. Ever since I was born, I've been working.
And I mean, isn't it such a problem that, you know, the minute that you're not celebrating yourself, people say, but come on, get up, cheer yourself up, you're doing well, why aren't you celebrating?
But who actually says that? Very few people actually tell you that. We have a problem, actually, that our community doesn't, many people in our community, not everybody, so don't get me wrong and start throwing shade and shouting on the program. But many people in our community don't realize the importance of encouraging other people around them to say, listen, Sasha, you're doing very well. You've got this program running. This is amazing. Do you know how many people wanted to do this? And you are doing it. This is amazing. Not many people say that. And then it takes me back to what I was saying, like, when you compliment people, we don't have that culture.
No.
You know, when you compliment someone, it's like, oh, do you want me? I'm like, no, I don't want you. I'm just saying you look good.
Yeah,
calm
there's
down.
Always an underlying motive.
Exactly.
It,
so it's the same thing with complimenting. I find like people say, they'll never say, very few people will come to you and say, you know what, you're doing so much well. And that's a problem we have as the African continent.
And again, let me just add on to that, okay? The idea of complimenting people, it needs to stop being purely on Instagram, because you'll see hundreds of comments scrolling down.
Exactly.
Well done, boo. Well done, bae. Well done. You know, congratulations on fire. But it needs to be taken into a more personal space.
More personal.
Well.
Like, I think we need to get offline. I mean, we need to get offline, actually, and have a more interpersonal relationship, because we never converse as people. Like, can I just tell you something? I was at the Devon Fashion Fair, and then most of the people that I saw that were there, it's people that I've literally, like, I'm friends with them on social media. I've been friends with them for like over 5 years.
Wow.
And I've met them at different fashion events for over 5 years here in South Africa and in other parts of the world. And there's always this superstar stardom that is still there. Like, people actually don't talk to you, but on social media you want to inbox me, and I'm like, but I'm here in real person, you won't even talk to me. And it's a problem that I've seen through my travels. I've seen that it's actually a problem that we as young Africans, we need to work on it, or else we're going to be doomed, because in many cases we don't see the value in the next person. Like, you sit in the front row with the same person for 5 days, they'll never say hi to you.
But you know, tagging you on the Instagram.
Exactly.
Story.
And I'm like, what's that all about? So again, because we don't see value in each other, that's why we will always get our stories not being told by us. Other people tell our stories, because us ourselves, we never even see each other as people. So it goes to what you're talking about, our own narratives. They'll never be told correctly until and unless we start to realize we have value in each other. Despite that I'm from Botswana, I'm from Swaziland, we need to look at each other as people that have some value addition. It's amazing.
Boom bang. So now, based on this experience, have you come back a different person?
I've come back a different person. I've come back with a more of a different mindset and a different perspective and view, and my eyes are a bit open. Because I just also realized that, you know, when you have, Africans have this thing of trying to sound very, you know, sympathetic, like, oh, when you have to introduce yourself, oh, hi, my name is Gilmore. I lost my father when I was like one year old, and I'm like, okay, right, I'm still waiting for your story. I don't know why we want people to always sympathize with us. I think that's why we have people taking advantage of us as Africans, and making sure that they always tell a story that they want about us as Africans. Because us as Africans, we are always sympathetic. And if someone says anything, we just say, oh, no, it's okay. So I came a different person from the fact that I realized that we need to wake up. We need to wake up and stop thinking that someone should come and save us as a continent. We need to do things for ourselves as Africans and as fellow countrymen, whichever country you come from. You can't wait for someone to do stuff for you. You need to wake up. And for me, that was like a wake-up call. Like, we had to be brought to the U.S. for us to realize that we're young African leaders. We can do something. Really?
There's something wrong with that.
Something is wrong. We are 68,000 of us. We're 1,000 of us. Why can't we start doing initiatives amongst ourselves to improve our spaces in our continent?
And hosting these initiatives in Africa.
In Africa, exactly. And so it was a wake-up call for me. I learned a lot from other fellow Africans, but it was a wake-up call to say we as young Africans need to wake up eventually, like now, before it's too late.
But now, during this period in Washington, did you go there with a specific aim in mind? What was important for you to achieve? What part of your story did you feel was crucial for you to share with the other participants?
I think the importance of surviving in my own space. Because you know how sometimes we look at a country and we're like, oh, Gilmore comes from Zimbabwe. How the hell are you surviving in Zimbabwe? And I'm like,
yeah,
I am surviving in that country. So for me, the most important thing was for me to share my story on how I'm surviving in a country like Zimbabwe, or someone is surviving in a country like Swaziland that is looked from outside as, oh, this country is nothing.
Of course.
So
yeah,
the fact that I am here, it means that there's something that I've been doing. So I felt I needed to share that with other fellow Africans, and other fellow Africans also need to share. But I feel like maybe there was not that much of an opportunity for us to share so much amongst ourselves. And also maybe we didn't create that initiative amongst ourselves to share and, you know, have an exchange, like a dialogue. In many cases, I think we're all running all over trying to bootleg. I don't know if I can say that on the show, but trying to suck up to other people, because we see them, oh, this one is from the US, this one is from Canada, so we need to suck up to them. And we never actually shared our own experiences, because the fact that you're from Nigeria, there's something that I can learn from you.
Yeah.
The fact that you're from South Africa and you're from Joburg, it means there's things that you've been doing that have made you survive. And for me, it was very important that we sort of like exchange those best practices, like, okay, how have you been doing it in your country? Because surely you've been surviving. So that was mainly my expectation, and unfortunately, I don't think we had that much of an exchange as young Africans.
Yeah.
We're all busy running around and trying to befriend other people that were not us as a people. So I find that a bit sad. It's, yeah, really.
And knowing that people tend to umbrella African people, let's be honest. Everyone who's from Africa, they tend to put them all under the same umbrella, you know, forgetting that there are obviously many countries that make up the continent of Africa. I mean, you and I actually chatted about this. What are your thoughts on the misconception that all African people are the same? And listeners, I'm not saying this in a bad light, because again, Gilmore, what are your thoughts on that? And do you think it's necessarily a bad thing to recognize that all Africans are not the same?
I actually think it's very important for us as Africans to identify ourselves individually and also recognize that we are different and our differences make us unique as a continent. So for me, it really, there's a time when I was in a class and thumbs up to my professor also who was taking me for classes, John Doggett. But there's a guest speaker who came through to talk about, they were giving us like economic, the GDPs of the world, like, Russia is here, China is here, the US is here, UK is here. And then they put Africa at, Africa's economy as a continent was at number 7. And then I'm listening to the conversation around and other fellow participants from Africa, like, surely we need to do something about it. And for me, it annoyed me because I was not excited about it. And they're like, but why are you not excited? I'm like, no, we should not aspire for Africa to be looked at as a country. The same way that the GDP of the UK is at number 2. We as individual countries, as South Africa, as Botswana, as Nigeria, as Ghana, we need to aspire to be individual countries. Economies that are at number 4 or number 1 or number 3 or whatever number that we, not for us to be put under an umbrella and be like, okay, if Africa actually works together, the economy of Africa will be at number 7. I'm like, no. So it's so much stupidity that we also have as Africans that we allow people to tell us things about ourselves. Like, how do you want to celebrate as 54 countries, one of the biggest continents in the world, being put as one country? No, I think it's very important that we realize we are different. And again, Africa is different. Like I tell you, like when you look at people from East Africa, West Africa, North Africa, Central Africa, Southern Africa, we are completely different. But the furthest you go out of the continent, the more close they become. So you realize Southern Africans are almost, they're sort of like grouped together. But when you're in Southern Africa, there's a lot of these whole xenophobia attacks that happen, which is a very sensitive topic because people feel like they don't want to talk about it, but it happens. And people need to be educated about it. These things happen, and then when they happen in Southern Africa, we sort of like are so much divided. But the beauty about when you travel outside the world, outside the continent, you realize you are basically almost the same. You are Nguni people, you speak the same language. Or you identify with something. You identify with just saying thank you. You identify with just saying welcome. Or you identify with saying I would like a cup of tea in the morning. Or you identify with things like I'm going to the bathroom or to the toilet. And someone's like, okay, you speak like me. So it's important that we realize we're different. And there's nothing wrong about us being different as a people. Africa is not a country. It's a continent with 54 countries and with chaotic 54 countries in a beautiful way. You know, it's a beautiful disaster.
And a beautiful... Kelly Clarkson. Ah, could I put it more better? So now, this moment right now, and especially since coming back afresh from this program and being exposed to so many different people, like you've said, what would you say is the African narrative being written as?
The African narrative is... Actually, firstly, I know everyone is going to agree to this. It's not being told by us Africans. And everyone's going to say, yeah, but we also, when we get the opportunities as Africans, we're not telling our stories. And why I'm saying that is, like, for example, you get to present in front of Rotarians in Texas, in the USA. And then the first thing that you say is like, oh, I come from a country where there's so much poverty. I come from a country where, I'm like, we all have problems, guys. We all have problems. And for me, it's Africans are also, we are also going into this whole space of just, you know, subscribing to, or we need to always find sympathy from the world. Like,
really? Do you think
that's what we do all the time. Even when we do a documentary, for the documentary to win an award, you need to tell a sob story of people starving and dying. Like, is that only the story that we have? So as much as the stories, the African narrative is not being told by us Africans, we also as Africans, when we get the opportunity, we tell it wrongly. The same thing, like you always say, oh, I come from this. You don't realize that the person you're telling also lost their mother when they were 6 months old. So what's so different about you? What's so amazing about you losing your parents when you're 10 years old? So for me, it frustrates me. Like, people always say this thing, and I tell them, I lost my dad when I was 3 years old. So what? And what my mother always says to me is, Gilmore, the world does not owe you anything.
Yeah.
And I appreciate her telling me that all the time when we were growing up. You know how people always look at you like, oh, you don't have this parent, oh, you don't have this parent, oh, you don't have this. And my mom says the world does not owe you anything, but you have so much to offer to the world. But it's only when you decide to step up and tell your story, not always the negative one, it's when you make a difference. So we as Africans, we have a huge problem. Like, we have a huge problem.
So, like, what do you think people, like, specifically are missing out on when writing the story, Africans specifically?
Africans, we have subscribed to selling a story. What sells overseas, what sells in other countries is the said African story. Poverty, things of killing, people, things of hunger. And we have subscribed to that.
And it literally kills me because there's so... I can't say there's so much more because I don't want to say much more. Like, there doesn't have to be that when telling the African story.
That's
not,
all.
Not to interrupt you, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I get
so,
it.
There's so much good and so many achievements and so much progress and prospects.
Like, for example, who's going to tell the story of our beautiful beadwork? Who's going to tell the story of our beautiful paintings as Africans? But you find also... I was watching Mzansi Magic the other day. I don't know if I'm giving them free mileage. And then the whole of Mzansi Magic is literally drugs, guns, killing, prostitution. That's all we see on Mzansi Magic. And I'm thinking to myself, if I'm a foreigner and I'm coming from the UK and I tune in, because Mzansi Magic is one of the most watched, isn't it, in South Africa. Even in Zimbabwe, everybody watches Mzansi Magic.
Really?
Like, it's crazy because it's DSTV, right? Mm. So I was tuning in there and I was thinking to myself, if I'm a foreigner, the first thing that I'm going to see that's being told about South Africa is how the Queen has got so much money and each person, because the Queen, the Sopi, they sell drugs. So it's, what's the story? What are we saying? We're saying you need to sell drugs for you to make it in life.
Yeah.
We're saying you need to own a gun for you to have power. Again, this is us telling that story. So when the world looks at us and say, actually, there's so much dying in Africa, we can't blame them at some point because we do the same. We tell those stories. So it frustrates me, like, people like all those people that have all those soapies on Mzansi Magic, they have the power. They are producing more than 5 soapies. Why the hell are they not producing anything that tells a different story about who we are as an African nation? Or as South Africans, for crying out loud, or Swati people. Why are we not telling a different story? Because all they seem to be telling is guns, 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 drugs, drugs, drugs. And I, as a young person, when I watch that, many young people that do not think much, they aspire to be that because that's what they see on TV. Again, who's responsible for that? Is it the people from the West or the East? It's us, because we're the ones that are writing those stories. So we have a problem, and we can't keep on looking at other people to solve our problems. We need to start looking at each other. Like, listen, the next door neighbor, how can we make our community better? How can we make our roads better? There's potholes. What can we do about it? Because we're constantly looking to China and expect China to come and fix our roads. But we are the ones that live in those places. So why are we not doing anything about it? So for me, it's like Africans also, we need to wake up again. It's just constantly like, let's wake up.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, like, what are your concerns, like, specifically in terms of people, Africans specifically, selling a story that actually isn't a true representation of an entire continent? What are your concerns with that? Like, for you, what are the far-reaching consequences that people don't realize will take place or will materialize when you sell a story that isn't true?
People, the funny thing is, like, the outside world actually believes in that, because many people from outside, what I learned in the US is, like, many Americans are not well exposed to anything that is not American. Like, literally, they're not exposed. So whatever that they have, the first hand, the first encounter that they have with anyone who's from Mali, which they call Africa, or anyone from South Africa, Africa again, from Zimbabwe, Africa, whatever that, the first encounter, that's what they take forever. So we need to realize that we have the opportunity to, with the exposure of knowing about things in Brazil, things in China, things in Malaysia, things in the US and the UK, because our system has that, or rather we have those flooding our systems, our entertainment, our music, and everything else. And the outside world, most of them, they have no access to whatsoever information about Africa. So that for me concerns me, because the moment they get any story that, like the Shaka Zulu, like people ask you stupid questions like, do you have monkeys in your yard or things like that. Like, up to date in the US, people ask you those questions. It's because that's what they see.
Yeah.
That's what they see. That's the first thing that they saw about Africa. Because when you even say, hi, I'm from South Africa, I'm from Zimbabwe, they'll be like, where is that?
Africa.
They're like, are you from Africa? And they say, yeah, I'm from Africa, but it's a huge continent, just like Europe.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, okay, oh, well, we just put it as one. So, you know what I'm saying? So, already that's a huge ignorant or arrogant kind of approach to life.
Yeah.
And the moment they only receive one story, one documentary from us that is very much negative throughout, that's what they'll keep forever. Because someone has asked me a stupid question like, oh, I saw a documentary that you guys hunt what? And then I was like, there is hunters. I mean, we come from the Stone Age, but we have moved so much. So, oh my gosh, you guys, you actually have like technology and things like that. I'm like, yeah, I'm speaking English right now. And I have an iPhone. So
and
I'm just trying to.
Cream donut.
Exactly.
And
so,
train.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm thinking that's the first hand information that they got. And we can't blame them because that's what we keep telling them. And my worry is that because many people don't care much about having information from the continent, whatever that they get at first hand, it might be through you and it's all about people dying. That's what they'll keep forever and it goes on and on and on. And they share also, their networks are huge, so they share that information.
Yeah.
And the arrogance is brought up because of what we tell or how we portray ourselves as an African people.
Absolutely insane. So now, honestly speaking, what can the average person listening to this do, the African person listening to this, to take a step forward in terms of, you know, holding that proverbial pen and making sure that at least they can't control all Africans, but at least their portion, their paragraph, their chapter of the African book can be rewritten in a positive way?
I think the social media right now, everyone is on social media.
Mm.
Everyone is flooded on social media. I think that life has become easier because everyone has become sort of like a citizen journalist. Everyone has become a storyteller in their own way. And I feel like it's up to us individually to tell whatever that we want to tell as part of our stories. And I think we shouldn't be embarrassed also about where we come from. Because when I say embarrassed, it's like, you know how we are the Bantu people. We've got certain practices that we have. Like, e.g., before I even continue, someone goes on to say, we had a lecture in the U.S., and someone goes on to say, to the girl from Swaziland, oh, your king is busy marrying all these women, he's abusing them, or things like that. And then this girl keeps quiet. Again, as Africans, I don't know why we cannot respond and when we're not okay with things. And then I say to her, automatically, I felt, for me, she's my next door neighbor.
Yeah.
Like, literally, we're from the same place. And then I put up my hand. I was like, I'm sorry. I think you cannot go on and saying these ill things about the king of Swaziland. He's like, why? He's got so many wives. I'm like, do you realize that's the culture? That's the culture. And it's one part that the Swati people should celebrate.
Yeah.
That's their culture. And maybe it's just that because of modernization, there's a lot of maybe HIV/AIDS that's being spread and people are using polygamy to, you know, not in the right way as it was done before.
Yeah.
But then this is how people have been like 100 years back. So why should we allow someone to insult your story and your history, part of your history, because you can't take it away? So we should never just shut up and keep quiet when someone says ill things that we know are actually not true, that are based on generalization to say, oh, in general, Africans are very corrupt. No, they're not. Not in general. They are corrupt people. They are corrupt leaders. They are corrupt individuals. But then not everybody is corrupt. In general, Africans have HIV/AIDS. No.
Oh, yeah. That's
we all don't have HIV/AIDS. And again, let's not generalize things like in general Africans are in poverty, in general things like that. So then I had like a debate with this person, and I was like, okay, what are your statements based on? He's like, no, that's what I read. I'm like, exactly.
What
you are here to hear from us, because we are the Africans. We are the people that are staying in that continent. She's a South African, she's a Swati, he's a Zimbabwean. Can you hear from them if you've got any questions about where they come from? Obviously, their stories are not rosy, but then ask them. Don't generalize things. So us also, we need to take a step. Let's use our social medias. Let's use our there's a lot of podcasts that are happening right
yeah.
now. There's a lot of TV shows. What are we telling besides showing people on the red carpet in Hollywood? What are we telling about ourselves, you know? So at the end of it all, I think even people that are listening, it's just a matter of you, like, How do you tell your own story in a very interesting way? And let's not be embarrassed about our history, guys. Like, our history is part of us. I mean, our culture is part of us. Let's not allow people to ridicule our culture, to say, oh, the Zulu people, or the Swati people, I'll give a Swati. Also the Zulu, the young girls when they're celebrating, they don't put on bras. But that's your culture.
That is your culture.
Celebrate it. Why are we allowing people to ridicule our culture, say, oh, it's nakedness, or this is abuse? Who said it's abuse? Like, really? If you want to know more about who someone is and they're from Ghana or from Nigeria, why don't you ask them and talk to them? So for me, it's like, it starts there. Let's tell our own stories as young people, and let's not be shy to stand up for things that we believe in general.
And also that, sorry, Gilmore, what you were touching on now about curiosity more than anything else. I know we chatted about this as well. Mm-hmm. About the fact that, you know, when somebody comes up to you, it doesn't necessarily have to be a racist thing.
No, it's not.
And, like, to me, it was so refreshing to hear you speak about this, because, like you said, like, in different scenarios, it's curiosity. And
it is.
How can you, like, what importance do you place on people accepting curiosity?
I think it's you know, when someone actually comes in, like, hi, I like your neck piece, what is it all about?
Mm-hmm.
That is curiosity. People actually want to know. And I feel like there's also this tension, especially racial tension, that's going on globally, where when a white person does say something, or a black person says something, it's always taken to a racial notch.
Yeah.
And for me, I come from a background where basically there's a whole multicultural, racial individuals,
it, yeah.
And it's like the United Nations, from family to friends to everything else. Like, my best friend is Muslim from Pakistan. So for me, it's like, the other time I was in Sweden, and then we're walking in this, it's actually a small town in the, like, in the, way, way far from the city center. It's called Talberg.
Yeah.
And then when I was walking there, with one of my friends, this little boy comes to me, and the mom says, sorry, my child just wants to touch your, I used to have an afro by then, they want to touch your afro and your skin. They really, like, they've never met anyone who's black or is darker skinned, because obviously television in them doesn't say tell much about who we are, besides that we're dying. So, and then for me, I didn't take it offensively. I actually thought, this is amazing, because she could have stood there and stared at me, you know.
Yeah.
But then she came through and said, I'm sorry, my son has never seen a black person. Do you mind if... I'm like, no, it's fine. And I'm sure some people that are listening, they're like, oh, you're so stupid. Why would you allow someone to touch your hair? Have we ever asked them to touch their hair? But for me, I found it as curious. Like, people are curious. And when people ask you something, it's... I think that shows that they're actually interested in knowing about who you are and what you're all about. So the fact that someone's like, oh, can I touch your skin? Later on, it led to a conversation. Oh, where are you coming from? I'm from Zimbabwe. Oh, what are you doing here? And the conversation went on. And they even invited me for dinner later on.
Oh, my goodness, really?
So for me, it was just curiosity. And I feel like as a people, we also have these... I don't know, it's like, well, black Americans, no offense to my black American friends. Like, black Americans are on a fuse. Like, they are on a fuse. They're always on about on a racial note. When someone does something, when they say something, they're always on a racial note. And I feel sometimes it's not always about races, about the race. Sometimes about curiosity. When even a white person goes to a rural area in Zimbabwe, in Cholocho per se, and you find little black kids running after you, they are curious because they've just never seen anyone like you.
Yeah.
So it's not racism. It's just curiosity. And I think there's a thin line between that.
Mm-hmm.
When someone actually says something verbally and they know and they have full knowledge and they go on to act ignorant, then we can say that's racism. But when someone just asks you questions and trying to get an understanding, that shows they want to understand who you are, because maybe the story that they've been told about who you are as a South African or as an African person is not what they are saying. They're actually seeing someone who's dressed well, who looks nice, who's got a nice way of expressing themselves, and they're asking you questions because they just want to find out.
And your encounter with them is then potentially the rewriting of the African narrative that we're speaking about.
Exactly.
For goodness sakes. So now, Gilmore, one last thing.
Are we ending already?
We're going to be ending in a few minutes. But one last thing before I get on to what's happening for Gilmore, you know, as of now and everything. In terms of the African narrative, I want to talk about... black people needing to prove themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that well, I have to be validated by society.
Yeah.
It gets to me. It really does. As a white person, I'll honestly and openly say it gets to me, seeing this on Twitter all the time. Why are you trying to prove that black is beautiful?
Yeah,
you shouldn't have to do that.
You don't have to prove it. Like, just leave it.
It's a sensitive topic, I know. But for me, what are what is your feeling on that?
Firstly, black people need to learn how to save money. Because you know what? There's like... I spoke about this with my friend at the time. I was like, black people need to learn to save money. Because the fact that we always want to prove ourselves to be better than the other skin color, it always brings us down to level zero. People don't know how to save money. People always want to buy expensive things. People don't celebrate. Just, you know, you are who you are. Just leave it. Don't have to prove it to anybody. Just leave who you are. So you find that a lot of us are just stuck in this thing of wanting to get validation. I feel as an entire African continent, we want to be validated.
Yeah.
We always, I've said this before, we always look to the East or look to the West for someone to approve what we are doing. But we never look even at each other. Like, when am I actually going to look at someone who's from Botswana, because I'm Zimbabwean, as a value addition? And to also validate me, or for us to work together. So we actually have a mental problem as an African continent, because we want validation. When something has gotten a stamp in Hollywood, we're like, yay, Peltusi has gotten a stamp in Hollywood. Well, she's been around for a long time. Why were you not seeing her as a person? But just because she's acting on Quantico in the USA, now you look at her as a much better person. You know, things like that. Whoever was seen on the BET Awards, so what? You know, so it's a mental problem that we have as a people per se. We always want to, I don't know, to prove, I don't know to who.
This justification that I'm black, you are black, and you are beautiful, so damn own it. There's no need to carry on about it. Stop trying to prove to white people and Indian people and all the people that you're beautiful, because you are.
Just shut up and live your life.
Be beautiful and live your life.
And save money too.
And save money
too. Like, they need to save and stop spending and overspending, thinking they want to be important. It's so sad, because... Again, this is why we go back to poverty.
Saddens,
because
me, yeah.
You get money and you have these big gigs or this big job. The first thing you think of doing is to buy, I don't know, the most expensive car. You don't have property. You haven't invested in your education or in your children's education, but you want to be buying flashy shoes that light, like, who cares what shoes do? And shoes that have spikes, like, you're going to be pricking balloons when you go to a party. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, for me, it does not make sense. So, black people, we need to change our mindset. And I think it's the only... I'll actually touch on, you know, this whole thing of black consciousness or black... what is this? Black consciousness,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
For me, what black people need to understand is black consciousness, English, is not about being superior over another race. Black consciousness is about you as a person, as a black person, being confident about yourself, improving your life, improving yourself, becoming a better person. Not for you to become better than a white person, Indian person, or mixed race person, or Chinese.
Yeah.
That's not what black consciousness is about. And a lot of people take it wrongly. They misunderstand the whole concept. They take it as, oh, black consciousness means I need to be better than this person. I get into this place, I need to smell better than whoever.
Yeah.
You can smell better, but you're broke. So it's black consciousness is not about being superior over another race. It's about you improving yourself as an individual and moving forward with yourself and being confident and realizing that you are beautiful and you are so much, not compared to anyone, but you as an individual. You need to sort yourself inside.
Yeah, stop trying to convince yourself that you are. So just accept it as it is. Stop trying to convince yourself otherwise. So now, ending this part of the conversation, I want to go quickly on to what is happening for Gilmore T. What is going to happen?
You know, I'm a host for a weekly TV show in Zimbabwe called Tatawena.
Okay.
So we are going to our new season, which possibly will start coming in 2018. So that is going to go on. But I'm sort of like just looking forward to doing more TV productions. Because Tatawena is more Pan-African conversational.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about food and its cultural relationship to a people. You find that Americans will eat McDonald's. It's very... unique to them. Tacos is unique to Americans. French fries are unique to French people. So us as a people, even as South Africans, as Zimbabweans, as Tswana people, we have things that are unique to us as a people. So our show is more in depth like that. We're trying to challenge people's perceptions. So I'm looking forward to doing maybe continuing with Tatawena, but also do more productions. And just doing more things in the fashion space and media space. And realizing that my voice is not only for myself, but it's for the guy next door who cannot get the same platform as I have.
Oh my goodness. So now, lastly, and unfortunately it is lastly, I mean, I wish this could continue for another 2 to 3, 4 hours.
4 hours.
But, so Gilmore, you've been exposed to many people and experiences along your journey. And throughout these, you know, this is the Youth Leadership Platform. So we have to touch on leadership. I mean, it's very important. And we always like to leave our listeners, you know, with a piece of leadership advice from all of the guests we have. So for you, what would you say are 3 key leadership principles that you keep close to you and your actions in everything you do?
3 leadership. I think as a leader, you need to, it's the same thing that I just said now, you need to realize that when you are working with people, leading people, you're not only, it's not only about yourself, but it's about other people. Like going to the Mandela Washington Fellowship, for example, I went there, but there are other 67,000 people that could not make it and go there. So then how am I using that opportunity to better the people that could not go? Because we all have different strengths. So my strength might be writing and talking and making sure I have confidence and I'm selected better than the next person. But doesn't make the next person less important. It just makes me a little bit, maybe I'm in grade 1 and they're in grade 0. You get it? Like I'm grade 2 and they're grade 1. But they're just as important as I am. So realizing that you represent so many people, not just yourself. Secondly, as a leader, I think the most important thing is to realize collaborations. Like the moment you realize, you put collaboration in your work, you realize that, again, it's not about you. It's about working with the people within the space and bringing better solutions to our communities, to our lives, to our families and our colleges and our schools. And the last principle, don't be a selfish prick. Be selfless.
Gilmore just put it out there.
Yeah, no, be selfless. I mean, it's not me all the time. I mean, you can learn from other people. Two-way communication. It's never about you just taking information to people and giving them food like they're chickens that are expected to eat and just grow without saying if they're enjoying the food or not.
Sustainable leadership.
Exactly. So let's make it two-way. Sustainable leadership. How do you go from here? Because you're in a situation where when you die, nothing else continues. You want other people to be able to pick up and move on with what we're doing, which is where our African continent is right now. We need people that are able to lead us and also realize that there's other people within ourselves that are leaders, and we empower on their capabilities so that we have sustainable leadership, sustainable development. We continue to become a better people.
There we go. It is Gilmore T. Moyer. Oh my goodness, I cannot believe it. Thank you so much for coming in today again to share this with us, you know, sharing your thoughts and your experiences and pretty much your thoughts on rewriting the African narrative. You know what, you guys out there, it's a sensitive topic, I know, but have that confidence within yourself. Stop trying to justify everything. Stop trying to look for validation from outside people. Stop preaching about, you know, being confident on Twitter, yet behind closed doors you're looking for that validation. Stop doing it. You are capable. Believe so. You are. Gilmore is living proof of it, for goodness sake. So, you know what?
So are you.
Thank you so much, Gilmore.
So are you. And everyone is listening also.
Everyone is listening as well. You're all young leaders, so just believe it. Believe in yourselves. For now, it is the Youth Leadership Platform on Cliff Central. And we'll see you next time, same place. Goodbye and God bless. CliffCentral.com.